Appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, Alex. Can you guys see me, or do you want me to stand up? Okay, cool. All right, appreciate it. All right, Living Legacies is the name of this workshop. Technically, we have three sets of legacies, right? The steps, the traditions, and the concepts. Well, you heard me blunder through my steps in the first talk, so I'm just going to talk about the traditions and concepts for the most part in this one, and how they apply to how I found they apply to my relationships in the world. And the way I'm going to talk about them is not go through all the traditions and then all the concepts. I'm actually going to go tradition and concept matching. My sponsor gave me a gift as we started working the traditions and said, you know, we have the opportunity also to work the legacies laterally. You work the step, tradition, and the concept at the same time. And there are connections in some of these that don't necessarily jump out if you don't necessarily put them in context together. And I think a lot of these are really interesting. So these are the Al-Anon traditions and concepts, so I will read them because the traditions are fairly similar between Al-Anon and AA, but the concepts do differ. When I had the opportunity to be part of a group where we kind of workshopped all of the concepts and traditions, and we looked at both AA and Al-Anon literature because we found it was a really rich perspective to look at how all of these have come together. All right. Tradition one. Our common welfare should come first. Personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. In this group as well, we had an exercise where we put it in terms, in the context of our personal lives, what would that tradition sound like? We don't have one for that one. But anyway, there is one for the concept. So what unity means in my life is very new. Unity was not something that I experienced growing up. It was one person makes the decision and everybody else goes along with it. And so the idea that we all... our common welfare is what's important was very foreign. I thought it was just the loudest person in the room, their welfare is important, and all of the rest of us have to follow along with it. So this teaches me that when I'm in any kind of group conscience, any relationship that I'm in, any group that I'm in, whether that's friendships, family, my workplace, all of those are forms of group in which there is a group conscience. And so when I'm in those groups, I'm participating for the common welfare. I just recently had an experience where I was suffering under the ailment of judgment of another individual that I work with, very strong judgment of this individual that I work with, because I have a tendency to see the world as black and white, good or bad, competent and incompetent, you know, moral high ground and moral low ground. That's just how I see it. And I'm working on deconstructing that, but it's a work in progress. And when I was seeing my workplace as, you know, someone's doing better, someone's doing worse, you know, this person deserves to be here and this person doesn't, it was not contributing to our unity. It was not part of the common welfare. It was not focusing on, you know, personal progress for the greatest number. It was maybe personal progress for me and definitely no progress for that person. And I had to remember that there are times, there are moments when I'm allowed to make mistakes. I'm allowed to learn something new and not be good at it immediately, and I am allowed to experiment, try new things without knowing if I'm going to be immediately successful at them. And the environment that I'm in, that's accepted. There's space for that. And the only reason that there's space for that is because it's okay for all of us to make mistakes. So am I contributing to this environment where it's okay to make mistakes and grow, because growth doesn't happen without trying new things? Or am I cutting other people down and saying, no, you're not allowed to do that because you're not good at it yet? I mean, that's not a space that I want to be in. And so personal progress depends upon me having acceptance of another person, so that when it comes my turn to not know what I'm doing, there's a general attitude of acceptance. To me, unity means that we are all in the same boat together. And personal progress for the greatest number means we are all going in the same direction. The only way that can happen is if it's a rowboat. I'm rowing my oar, somebody else is rowing their oar. My job is to row my oar to the best of my ability and let them do their job to the best of their ability. It's not to be calling orders at the front of the boat, because then, you know, it's lopsided. We'll go in circles. You know, like, there's no reason that I need to be doing that. It's just, what can I do to the best of my ability so that we all move in the same direction? Concept one is... Oh, Lord have mercy, where is it? Okay, concept one, the ultimate responsibility and authority for Al-Anon world services belongs to the Al-Anon groups. The personalized version is very simple. It's, I am responsible for myself. It teaches me I am responsible for myself. And when I first went through the concepts, these struck me as like things that were common sense that I should have known, and yet I didn't. Because in alcoholism, I didn't learn common sense like that. I learned different kinds of common sense, you know, but those were not helpful to me in the world. So the idea that I am responsible for myself gives me a lot of freedom. It keeps me accountable for my actions. And it also tells me that I don't get to blame my actions on another individual, another group, or the world. And when I get to make decisions about my life, I have that authority. I have the authority to make those decisions. I don't have to go out and check with someone else, hey, is this a good idea for me to do? And then go, I don't care. It has nothing to do with me. I am responsible for myself. I am here where I'm at. I have to know where my feet are in order to be able to be responsible for myself. Tradition 2, for our group purpose, there is but one authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. A personalized version is, in my relationships, there is but one authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our group conscience is our mutual decisions. Each of us is a trusted servant. No one governs. I grew up in a household where there was one ultimate authority, and that ultimate authority was my mother. And as time progressed, I had to realize that there is only one ultimate authority. Whether I'm in an environment where somebody assumes they are the authority, that doesn't make them that. There is always but one ultimate authority, and that's a loving God. In every mutual decision that there is in any of my relationships, that is a group conscience, and I get to treat it like a group conscience, even if the other person isn't aware of that. You know, a lot of times I have to interact with people who aren't in recovery. Imagine that. And they don't know that we're having a group conscience, but I know that we're having a group conscience. And when that's the case, I can let there be. I can understand that there's one authority, and it's a loving God. I don't get to govern over this other person. I'm a trusted servant. And when I walk around the world with the understanding that I can always be a trusted servant, whatever the context, my attitude towards what I'm doing is different. Because, you know, service is gratitude in action. If I'm a trusted servant in the world, my actions and what I do for others and what I do as a part of, you know, as a part of things, is gratitude in action, gratitude for this life that I didn't think I was going to have, you know, to this loving God. Concept 2, the Al-Anon family groups have delegated complete administrative and operational authority to their conference and its service arms. That's a lot of words, but in the context of my life, the spiritual foundation of my participation is group conscience, delegation of duties, mutual trust, communication, accountability, and shared responsibilities. All of those words terrified me for a long time. Delegation, trust, communication, accountability, and shared responsibility. Delegation was terrifying because I didn't think that anybody else was going to do a good job. I did not think that anybody else was going to do a good job. Giving up that control was very hard. And realizing that when I am part of something that involves trusting other people to do their part, whatever their part may be, sometimes their part is not going to look like what I want it to look like, and that's okay. That's okay because there's a loving God that's guiding what we're doing. Okay, remembering tradition 2, there is a loving God that is in charge of everything. I am not. So if that's the case, I don't need what somebody else does to look exactly the way that I think it should. It just is what God wants it to be. And so if I'm delegating, that's an act of me trusting God. When I'm trusting my fellows, I'm trusting God. Communication and accountability and shared responsibility. This accountability builds on tradition one and concept one. I forgot to link the two of those. But, you know, unity, what is my part? And also I'm responsible for myself. You know, it's all about what am I able to do and what am I responsible for? And so when I'm accountable to somebody else, when I'm in constant communication, when I share my responsibility with them, it requires that I understand what I can do and what I can't do. There are things that I don't bring to the table, and that's okay because God didn't give me every single gift on the face of the earth, because that would be it'd be boring, because there wouldn't need to be anybody else, because it'd just be me. But there are things I don't bring to the table, and those things come from others, and I have to be able to share with others, what am I able to do, what do I know of myself, and what are you able to do, and what do you know of yourself, so that we can share the things that make sense for us to do that. Tradition 3, the relatives of alcoholics when gathered together for mutual aid may call themselves an Al-Anon family group, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation. The only requirement for membership is that there be a problem of alcoholism in a relative or friend. Personalized version, the basic requirement for a good relationship is a mutual desire to keep it healthy. I don't know about the rest of you, but I struggled with forming healthy relationships for a very long time because I didn't know what that looked like. I wanted somebody to tell me, this is the basis of a good relationship. And nobody would tell me that. Nobody would tell me what it was about. But here's what it is. To have a good relationship is a mutual desire to keep it healthy. A lot of my relationships for a long time didn't meet that standard. The principle of mutual aid is extremely important because it's my metric for whether or not I still need to have certain people in my life. A lot of times I'll just feel icky about someone, and I don't know where it comes from. I don't know what it is. For a long time I had a hard time understanding what my boundaries were. And a lot of times when I feel icky about a person, it's because there's an issue of boundaries. But it comes down to, are my interactions with this person still about mutual aid? Is it about we are both here for each other in the ways that we are here for each other in the rooms? Is that the energy that it's in this relationship too? And I had a tendency to not seek out or participate in the creation of relationships that were like that. I like to take care of people. I wanted it to be one-sided. I didn't know how to trust other people, so I found people who would trust me, but I wouldn't trust them. And I also found the opposite. There were other people that I dumped on and I didn't, reciprocate that. And it meant going through those interactions and looking at, is there a capacity for mutual aid here? Do we both have a desire to keep it healthy? Do we both have a desire to support this connection that we have? If not, it's time for us to part ways. And that's okay. That's okay. My sponsor at one point, I was going through a breakup, and she said, the end of a relationship is not a failure. And that kind of blew my mind. I thought it was. I thought that I had to maintain a connection or I was a failure at being able to be a person and connect with other people. And it's just sometimes times change, people part. But if I understand the nature of my relationships and whether or not we are here for each other, looking at what those actions are, this is a part of taking my inventory constantly, looking at the end of the day, what did I not feel good about? What did I do? What do I feel good about? This interaction that I had with this person, have I left the last several interactions with this person feeling like we were mutually aiding one another, or do I feel like we were taking something from one another? And that gives me a good, simple way of understanding the way that I feel and whether relationships are still good in my life. Concept 3, the right of decision makes effective leadership possible. It's very short. Most of them are not short, so I love that one. The personal one is longer. Mutual trust and the right of decision are necessary to create and maintain healthy working relationships. So this is building on the previous concept, the tradition about what makes a good relationship, and its commitment to being to a healthy relationship. Hope my words stay in order. And where that comes from is mutual trust and the right of decision. The right of decision didn't make a lot of sense to me for a while until I looked at the reason I felt so powerless in my home a lot of times as a child was because I did not have the right of decision. I did not have the right of decision about my choices, about what happened in my life. I obviously didn't have the right of decision for others, and I didn't feel like I could participate in family decision making. I felt like I didn't have a voice. And so leadership scared me because if you don't grow up with this understanding of what a right of decision looks like, when I was given a job, when I was given responsibilities, when I was supposed to take care of things, I didn't have any confidence that I could, that I was allowed to. I didn't know what good decision making was because I hadn't made any decisions. So I was terrified of leadership. I thought that leadership was just like, micromanaging and being, controlling about everything and not what is the right of decision and effective leadership. That's where it comes into, is effective leadership. And so now I've gotten to a point that in all of my connections that I have with others, the right of decision is important. If I tell somebody, if I'm cohabitating with somebody and I say, hey, will you go to the grocery store and pick up milk? It is their right of decision to determine the brand of the milk, the price of the milk, and the type of the milk. Well, if I don't care about the type of the milk, then that's fine. They get to decide those things. If I really care about that, I can tell them exactly what it's going to be. But part of I trust this other individual to make choices that contribute to our common welfare in this household, I trust that they'll be able to do that. And that's okay, and I can let them do that. And then I don't have to worry about it. The right of decision and allowing others the right of decision and allowing myself the right of decision reduces the things that I'm worrying about constantly, you know, the hamster wheel spinning. I don't have to worry so much about that if I trust that the other person in their effective leadership of whatever role that they're taking at that moment, that they will do the best that they can. That's what it comes down to, is that they'll do the best that they can, and I trust that they'll do the best that they can. Tradition four, where did it go? Tradition four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting another group or Al-Anon or AA as a whole. In my life, I am autonomous in relationships except in matters affecting other people or the relationship. This tradition is really, really, really important to me because it taught me what boundaries were. Like I said, I had no idea what boundaries were. But this taught me where do I stop and another person starts. There's in Al-Anon, there's this book called Paths to Recovery. It covers our legacies, the steps, traditions, and concepts. And it's really wonderful. And in the passages about tradition four, there's a line where it says, the right of my fist stops at the tip of your nose. Or maybe it's the other way around, your fist, my nose, whatever it is. But I get to make decisions. I get to make decisions about my life. Here's where that right of decision comes in. Here's where that I'm responsible for myself comes in. I get to make decisions about my life. As long as they don't affect somebody else. Once they affect somebody else, then we have a group conscience about it. Then we get to understand how it affects one another and what's okay and what's not okay. But I get to make decisions about myself. And that tells me what is in my hula hoop. What is here? And I have to... The step four, tradition four, concept four thread is really strong because step four teaches me my inventory, who I am, who am I, what is going on in my body, what is going on in my mind, what do I have, what do I not have, what do I bring to the table, and once I understand that, once I understand what's inside the house, I know where I can put the fence, you know, I know what I can do, where I stop, and what I need, and I know that after this point. Because this is not in my inventory. This is another person. So this is not my thing anymore. So this is where my autonomy is. And then concept four, participation is the key to harmony. Everyone loves this one because it's super short and it's easy to remember. Participation is the key to harmony. In my life, there can be harmony in my life when I participate in it. So this is the extension of autonomy. Now that I know who I am, what I do, and what I can provide and where I stop and someone else starts, I can actually start to actually talk to other people. Before that, I don't know what I'm doing, so I don't get to talk to other people. But like, you know, once I know that, I get to participate because I know what I can provide. And when I do so, there can be harmony. I play an instrument. I don't know how many of you may play an instrument, but being part of, for example, a symphony teaches a lot about what participation means. And in a symphony, there's harmony, obviously, when things are going well. When every person is playing their part, to the best of their ability. You know, the violinist does not need to be playing the oboe part. That will not work very well. You know, when I am participating, I am doing my job. It again, ties into tradition one. The common welfare coming first, personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. That's where the harmony comes in. When I'm doing what I can, when I'm in a group conscience, I need to be participating in my group conscience. Because if I show up to my group conscience and I never say anything and I don't really contribute to the discussion at all, I'm not upholding my service role as being part of that group conscience because I'm not participating in it fully, and so I'm not contributing to that harmony. So if every relationship in my life has a group conscience, I ought to participate in those things as well. When I get to participate in my life, I can have harmony in it. When I participate in my relationship with my higher power, there's harmony in my relationship with my higher power. This also tells me that I don't have to participate in everything. It tells me I have freedom over the things that I participate in. If I see a train wreck, I don't need to get on. You know, if I see something that I'm like, that, no, I know that. I know the signs. That is super dysfunctional. I don't have to participate in it. My sponsor says that, you know what, I don't just have to find myself on the roller coaster. If I see myself walk in the gate, buy the ticket, stand in line, I can still decide before getting on. I can still leave. I can go, you know what, I don't need to do this. And that's a freedom of choice that I never thought I was going to be able to have. Tradition five. Each Al-Anon family group has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps of AA ourselves, by encouraging and understanding our alcoholic relatives, and by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics. In my life, my relationships are an expression of my primary purpose, a continued conscious deepening of my relationship with God. And so it's a little bit of a stretch for me to understand how we got to this personal role. But what is the primary purpose of Al-Anon that, of any recovery fellowship really, but the primary purpose of Al-Anon that draws me, because we are not here to change anybody else. We are not here to, we do a little bit of educating on what the disease of alcoholism is, but we're not here to lecture. We're not here to tell other people how they should live our lives. We're here to help. We're here to help. My spiritual purpose, I think everybody might have their differences in their primary purpose, but my primary purpose is to be of maximum service to God and my fellows. And so I want everything in my life to align with that purpose. If it doesn't align with that purpose, it's unnecessary. That's what keeps me in line with my higher powers' intentions for me. That's how I understand myself. And so to do so, my relationships are part of that. My relationships is when I'm trusting others, I'm trusting God. To be of maximum service to God and my fellows means that I have to take risks. I have to be willing to talk to other people, try things I've never tried before. Sometimes service pushes me into things that I am uncomfortable with, and that helps me grow. Which means that if I'm being of maximum service to people outside of the rooms also, I'm going to be uncomfortable sometimes in order to be able to grow. But I have certain principles that guide me, all right? I practice the 12 steps. I practice the 12 steps in all of my affairs. That transition, that goes from the very wording of the tradition. I practice this 12 steps of AA myself. And I encourage and understand. I encourage and understand others. And I welcome and I give comfort. I can remember those. I encourage and I understand and I welcome and I give comfort. Because I'm here to help. To be of maximum service. Concept 5, the rights of appeal and petition protect minorities and ensure that they be heard. Man, that didn't make a lot of sense to me when I first read it. I was like, okay, whatever, appeal, petition, why could this possibly relate to my life? The rights of petition. Petition is minority opinion, and appeal, which is consideration, promote unity and respect. Unity and respect are priorities for me. I learned that in tradition 1, and I've learned that in the other traditions and concepts. You know, unity and respect are priorities for me because they help me live my life and be in the sunlight of the spirit, really, when I'm out in the world. So the rights of minority opinion and consideration. This tells me that people can have differences of opinions and we can respect all of them. You know, I have the right to have an opinion, even if it's not shared with the rest of the room. You know, the rights of appeal and petition when I am the one person in a group conscience who 99% of the people in the room might believe a certain thing and I believe different, and I get to say my piece about it. That's my responsibility to participating in the group conscience. If I think, no, I don't think this is in line with our traditions, I don't think this is in line with our concepts, whatever it may be, I can say my piece. And then I let go of the outcome. That's my job. I let go of the outcome. And then it's up to the group conscience. And sometimes the group conscience people say, actually, yeah, that's a good point. And sometimes they don't. And that's okay. But I have the right to say my piece. So when I think of that in my relationships, it means that when I have disagreements with someone else, when I think that, oh, I am so right. I am so incredibly right. You could write an encyclopedia about what I'm saying because it is fact. When I think so, even though I might think so, the other person gets to say their piece. They get to, because I don't know what's going on in their head, and I don't need to know. I am not the ultimate authority. They get to say what they get to say because we are equals. Because I understand that out of that's what humility is, to understand I am part of this relationship. And so they get to say their opinion, and then I get to be considerate of that. I get to respect that they have said their piece, and I may not agree. That's okay. I don't have to agree with them about everything. They don't have to agree. But this means we can have a difference of opinions, and it's okay. This is really helpful. Outside of the rooms, I thought I was never... I meet people in the rooms that I probably wouldn't have talked to outside. You know, we may have very different opinions about, you know, a lot of external things. And I always thought that was kind of a phenomenon about how can I be friends with somebody in the program and share really intimate details, intimate parts of my heart with somebody when, you know, if we go outside, we might have different political views, social views, economic views, whatever it may be. How can that happen? And why doesn't it happen when I'm out in the world? Why can't I make those connections? And it's because of we can have those differences, and we know that that's not what matters. You know, what matters is that we're here to share what's on the inside. And so I thought, you know, what if I take that energy out into the world just as a test run, just to see, what if I give people the benefit of the doubt? You know, what if I don't automatically make a judgment about people? I tend to just kind of like call the people I see with like, okay, well, I see that you look like this, and so I'm probably not going to get along with you, and you look like this, and I won't get along with you. I heard you say that, so we're just not going to have a conversation. What if I didn't do that? What if I gave people a chance? It's pretty crazy. We could have a difference of opinions, and it doesn't mean that we can't interact with one another. You know, especially when it's an outside issue. I'm going to get into that a little bit later. If it's an outside issue, it doesn't have to affect me. We can have differences of opinion. It's okay. Tradition 6. Our family groups ought never endorse, finance, or lend our name to any outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary spiritual aim. Although a separate entity, we should always cooperate with Alcoholics Anonymous. In my life, I ought not overly invest myself in others' spiritual, emotional, or physical growth, lest problems of ego gratification divert me from my primary spiritual aim. I don't like that one, because it's true. Ego gratification. That's what money, property, and prestige is to me. Money and property don't appeal to me as much, but prestige? Oh, I will go to the ends of the earth for prestige. Prestige is somebody else telling me you are okay. Prestige is somebody else telling me you are good enough. I think that you are good to be here. You are better than somebody else. You are important. All those things. I crave that from somebody else, you know. But that diverts me from my primary spiritual aim, because I turned another person into my higher power at that point. At that point, I am no longer, you know, seeking to increase my relationship with the higher power of my understanding. I'm just wanting somebody else to validate who I am. I've lost touch with the idea at that point that I am important just because I am here. If I'm craving that ego gratification from someone else, and this tradition gives me a very clear-cut directions. It gives me a very concrete if-then statement. All right, if I have been diverted from my primary spiritual aim by a problem of money, property, and prestige, it is due to endorsing, financing, or lending my name to an outside enterprise. I can work backwards. Usually I don't pick up on, you know, this is my behavior and this is what landed me in it. No, usually I'm just like, I feel bad. I feel bad and I don't know why. And so I can track backwards. When have I endorsed, financed, or lend my name to an outside enterprise? I didn't think that I did for a long time, and then I looked at my actions and I was like, no, I love to endorse, finance, and lend my name. When other people are acting crazy, I can endorse that. I can go, yeah, I'll go along with you on that. And that is me endorsing their actions, even if I don't believe in them. Sometimes I will do that because, oh, what if this person doesn't like me if I don't do that? What if they don't want to be around me if I don't say that they're good for doing that, or they tell a lie and I know that they tell a lie, and I go, you know, as if I believe them. You know, what if I don't do that? And it's like, well, if I don't do that and the relationship falls apart, is that really a relationship based on mutual aid that I want to have in my life? Crazy. It's an uncomfortable thought to sit with. I would finance others. I would lend money to others, and I would lend a lot of money to others, because I learned at a young age that from others in my family that if you hurt somebody, you can always give them money and it'll make it better. because, you know, people would hurt me and then they would give me money to make it better. And it didn't make it better, but, like, I learned that that's what you do. And so when I would hurt people, I would give them money to try to make it better. Or I walked around constantly feeling guilty about my relationships. I felt a lot of guilt in my relationships. I didn't know exactly about what, but it was just like, oh, I'm bad at this. And so I would throw money at people because I hoped that it would make me feel better. It didn't make anybody feel better. But then I would hold it over their head. I had strings. I always had strings attached when I was lending money. And it was, you need to know that I'm doing this for you. You need to know that I'm taking care of you. You need to acknowledge that I'm doing these things for you that nobody else would do. And it was, I just ended up with resentment after resentment after resentment, because I was in the search of ego gratification. That's what it was. Now I don't lend money. I will, if I'm giving money to somebody, I'm giving it to them with the assumption that I am never going to get it back. If they choose to pay me back, cool, fine, all right. But I give it now with the assumption that I am never getting it back. It is not my business what they do with it. If I give somebody money for groceries and they spend it on drugs, it's none of my business. If I know that they have a drug problem, I don't have to enable this. I don't have to continue over and over again. But at that moment, I'm not going to go, you know what, I gave it to you for this, but because you did that, no, now you have to pay me back. No. I just take note for the next time and be aware of what that decision was. I don't lend money anymore. And I don't lend my name to others, to outside enterprises that don't have anything to do with me. It means that I get dragged into controversy that I don't need to. And that diverts me from my primary spiritual aim. Oh, also at the end we say, although a separate entity, we should always cooperate with Alcoholics Anonymous. This tells me that cooperation is foundational. It is fundamental to my ability to interact with others is that I can cooperate. I can always cooperate with you know, the nature of the relationship of Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous is that we are all recovering from the same disease. We are all in the same boat. We are all on the same side of things, you know. And so when I identify that there are others who are in the same boat as me, I cooperate with them. Even if we may have differences of opinion, even if we may have different priorities, we cooperate. And that's a skill that's become very important for me. Concept 6, the conference acknowledges the primary administrative responsibilities of the trustees. This is a super boring one, isn't it? Well, in my personal life, shared responsibility and shared leadership help make balance and effectiveness possible. Balance was something I sought for a long time and didn't know where to find. I didn't know where to find balance. I still struggle with balance. Balance is hard. I see the world as black or white, so it's hard to come into the middle and understand that there are in-betweens. Shared responsibility and shared leadership. It pushes my understanding of powerlessness and a faith in a higher power to its limits to be able to share something that I've been holding because, you know, I want to control it. I want to know that the outcome is going to be okay because I'm in charge of it. No, I'm not in charge of it. I'm not in charge of it. And I have to be able to share that with others and, you know, lean on others and have them lean on me as well and exchange that so that there can be balance. There can't be balance if I'm holding everything in the middle of my fist. There has to be balance. Tradition 7, where'd it go? Tradition 7, every group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. In my life, I strive to be self-supporting spiritually, emotionally, financially, and physically, declining offers for others to run my life. I was not self-supporting for a long time. I was not self-supporting, and I did not give others the dignity of being self-supporting. I was financially self-supporting for the most part. I wasn't conscious of how, like, you know, I wasn't solid on that. Actually, this is a little later. I'll say that for later. But, you know, I was financially self-supporting, but spiritually, emotionally, and physically, I was not necessarily self-supporting. I relied on others emotionally and spiritually a lot. I relied on them to tell me that I was okay, that I was going to be fine, that, you know, what I was doing was good, that I was allowed to be here. And I didn't allow others the dignity of being self-supporting for themselves. You know, I would throw money at them. I would constantly take care of their emotional needs, their physical needs, when they absolutely could have taken care of them themselves. Our detachment pamphlet is one of my favorite pieces of literature. And in it, it says, there's a list of things in Al-Anon that I learn I don't need to do for others. And one of those is I do not need to manipulate situations so that others will get up, eat food, pay bills, not drink, or see things my way. And I used to manipulate situations so people would do that all the time because I wasn't allowing them to be self-supporting. I was not allowing them to do things. I was doing things for them that they absolutely could do for themselves. Concept 7, where did it go? Where did concept 7 go? Hello. The detachment pamphlet. It's a piece of Al-Anon literature. Oh, there it is. It's a piece of Al-Anon literature. It's a little like one sheet pamphlet. It's dark blue. It has like a dark blue border around it. I highly recommend anybody who's willing to go check out the detachment pamphlet. It's a short read, but it's really, really powerful. It talks about detachment is not. Yeah, free download. It's on the World Wide Web, and it's also probably at our Al-Anon literature table as well. So go give it a check out. I used to keep a copy of it in my wallet until it completely fell apart. But it's a short read, but it's really great. All right, concept 7. The trustees have legal rights while the rights of the conference are traditional. This one teaches me a lot about what happens in my family, what it is to have legal and traditional rights. It teaches me what is happening in my workplace, what it is to have legal and traditional rights. So legal rights are things that, you know, I'll take my workplace as an example. If I am a supervisor, I have certain legal rights in order for me to be a team leader for these people that I'm in charge of. And what does it mean to be participating in our certain rules that we have for this workplace? You know, what is it to be contributing to this business? But I have traditional rights in that my team trusts me. It's important for them to be able to trust me, and it's important for me to hear them. It's important for me to hear how they're feeling, how they feel that they are a part of this group, if they feel valued, if they have problems that they're able to come to me with those without it just being, you know, somebody broke a rule and you need to enforce a consequence. It's like, hey, I'm facing this problem. What do I do about it? it's important for me to be able to take off the hat of, you know, these are the legal responsibilities and just be able to interact as another member of this group conscience. In my workplace, there's a group conscience. Nobody else knows there's a group conscience, but I do. And I'm part of it. And that requires humility, that I'm not above these people at all. I'm a trusted servant. In my relationships, it also means that in my family, I'm living with my parents currently. I'm about to move away, but we have had to learn where our responsibilities are now, because last time I lived with my parents, I was a minor. And so they had certain legal responsibilities over me. Well, now I'm an adult. And so the legal responsibilities are far reduced. And now we have basically an entirely traditional-based family dynamic, where we have to understand that we're just people, we're equals, and so we get to contribute equally. And that's very difficult, but it keeps us on equal ground. Tradition 8. Al-Anon 12-step work should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. In my life, healthy relationships are unprofessional, free, and giving, each to the other, but may sometimes require special workers. My relationships were not always unprofessional, free, and giving. A lot of times they were professional, costly, and taking. They were not for free and for fun. My relationships were for a purpose. They were so that I could get something. Sometimes that thing was ego gratification. Sometimes that thing was, you know, love from others. Sometimes it was like a physical thing, whatever it may be. No, relationships are non-professional. The ways that I reach out to a newcomer in a meeting, that is the kind of energy that I want to bring to my relationships. This is something that I do just because I'm giving back out of gratitude. That's what it is that I want to walk out into the world with. Sometimes it does require special workers. It just requires sometimes outside help, and that's okay. That's okay. Concept 8, Alan, the Board of Trustees delegates full authority for routine management of the Al-Anon headquarters to its executive committees. This talks about delegation. In my life, I trust group members to carry out our routine obligations and remain willing to seek additional support when needed. This talks about trust. Do I trust the people in my life to carry out responsibilities? Do I trust them with many different kinds of responsibilities? And am I willing to provide support? This is not just, hey, I gave you this job. You have to take care of everything about this job now. If you can't handle it, that's your problem. No, that's not how it works, because that's not contributing to the common welfare. If I say, hey, will you be able to do this? And they go, you know, they get 75% of the way through and they say, actually, I'm hitting a really hard part with this. I'm able to provide support then. And it meant that I didn't carry that first 75%, so I can do other things. I can apply my gifts and talents to other places, but then I can contribute to that as well. It's all about, you know, pursuing balance. And that links in with in tradition 8, you know, I do things for free and for fun, but it's okay to seek help. It's okay to seek help from people who are more qualified and who may have more experience with certain things. And that's what I'm allowing room for also in Concept 8, is that we are able to do these things freely. But when we need outside help, it's okay to ask for outside help. Tradition 9. Tradition 9, our groups as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. In my life, a healthy relationship is flexible in its organization with balanced participation and responsibilities. There are certain buzzwords that keep being repeated: unity, balance, cooperation, you know, mutual trust, things like that, because they're important. I had to hear them over and over again because they were not common sense to me. They were new, these ideas. So a healthy relationship should be flexible. I struggle with flexibility. I mean, not like as a person, like I'm double jointed in most of my bones. So like I'm fairly flexible. But as far as emotionally, no, I'm really rigid. As soon as I find a place that I consider safe, my comfort zone, it has to stick to that. It has to be here because I know what's happening if I stay right here. And that doesn't allow for flexibility. But unfortunately, life is flexible, life changes. And when I'm stuck and I'm rigid, I'm not growing because I'm staying right in that spot. So being flexible and understanding balance is inherently linked with flexibility. I have to be willing to give up that feeling of if I'm not right here and I don't understand exactly where my bounds are, that everything's going to fall apart. It's not going to fall apart. That's where my trust in my loving God comes in, and that, like, you know what? It's okay if we move a little bit. It's okay if I don't know exactly what the next step is going to be, because God knows what the next step is going to be, so I don't need to think about it. And concept 9. Oh, concept 9 scared the bejesus out of me. Because you know how I talked about it? I didn't know what leadership was and I was terrified of leadership. Here's where it comes in. Good personal leadership at all service levels is a necessity. In the field of world service, the Board of Trustees assumes the primary leadership. There's a wonderful essay by Bill W. in our Al-Anon service manual about good personal leadership, and it's probably in AA service manual, probably somewhere. But it's excellent, and he talks about the qualities of good personal leadership that that names them. I don't remember all of them off the top of my head, but vision is one of them. Flexibility is another one of them. It comes back again. And so good personal leadership, you know, I was terrified of being a leader. I was terrified of what that meant. I didn't know what good personal leadership was. And they had the word good in there. There's not a lot of times in our legacies that the word good comes in. I don't think there is any other time that good comes in. The idea of good and bad, I was like, oh my God, I'm not going to be a good leader. I'm not going to be able to exercise good personal leadership. But what does personal leadership mean to me? Every time that I do something, I'm exercising personal leadership. I'm responsible for myself. When I'm a trusted servant, I have a form of personal leadership, and I just do the best that I can. You know, none of us has claimed perfect adherence to these principles, just like this. You know, I practice good personal leadership to the best of my ability, and it just means leading by example. Am I walking out these principles to the best of my ability in my life? If I'm doing that, then I am leading by example, and I am exercising good personal leadership. Tradition 10. I express, this is the personal one, I express no opinions on outside issues. I think the Al-Anon family groups have no opinion on outside issues. Hence our name ought never be drawn in public controversy. That's my mother. She's wonderful. She remembers everything. we have no opinion on outside issues. Hence our name ought never be drawn in public controversy. I had lots of opinions on outside issues. All my opinions were on outside issues. I had very few opinions about myself. I had most of my opinions about everybody else. So I express no opinions on outside issues, especially about other people. Hence my name ought never be drawn in public controversy. I mind my business. When I mind my business, I don't get drawn into controversy. It's fairly simple, and it keeps me in my hula hoop. Concept 10. This doesn't have the original wording on there. The personal one is a working balance is maintained with careful definitions of responsibility and authority and honored boundaries. Al-Anon service work, service responsibility, service authority is balanced with carefully, service responsibility is balanced with carefully defined service authority and double-headed management is avoided. This one is really made a big impact in my family. Service responsibility and service authority is part of effective decision, the right of decision. I would sometimes get responsibility for things, but I wouldn't have the authority to make decisions about that. It was a very helpless feeling to think, I'm supposed to be in charge of this, but I don't get to make any decisions about it. So that doesn't make any sense. So they're balanced together, authority and responsibility. And what that means for double-headed management is that if I tell somebody, hey, will you go through and make the beds, and they don't make the beds in the way that I think that they should, I can't go behind them and make them again. Because that's completely negating the fact that I asked this person to do that. It means that I don't trust what they're doing. It means that I have not given them the authority to do this thing. I've just sort of like said, hey, go do this. But I didn't give them the authority to do this to the best of their ability. I think that the way that I want it done is the most important way of getting it done. Just super quickly, I moved back in with my parents at the beginning of the pandemic to take care of my grandmother. She had terminal cancer, and my mother and I were her primary caregivers, and we found that we were stepping on each other's toes after about a month. We found that we were stepping on each other's toes really badly. So we sat down and we looked at concept 10 and 11 and what that meant, and we organized the things that we were doing. What is our family's primary purpose? What is our family's primary purpose? And every thing that we had to do during the day, we wrote them out and we put them in a category. Does this fit in with our family's primary purpose? Everything else comes second. But what fits with our primary purpose? And then whose gifts and talents work best for these things? Who, you know, we split up laundry. We thought that laundry was one big activity. No, there's multiple parts of laundry. There's gathering the laundry. There's putting the laundry in the washing machine. There's transferring the laundry from the washing machine to the dryer. And then there's taking it out and folding it. Well, I'm okay with the first three, four of those. I hate folding. I hate folding. My mom is fine with folding. So we split it up. I do the first part of the laundry, and then she folds. And all the problems about laundry got solved, right? Because it was I don't want to do the laundry because I don't want to do the, you know. We balanced these out. And that way we didn't have double-headed management because we had our individual responsibilities. Tradition 11. Tradition 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, and TV. We need to guard with special care the anonymity of all AA members. The personal one, I best demonstrate my principles and purposes by actions rather than promotion. Attraction rather than promotion, am I walking out the steps? Am I practicing these principles in all of my affairs? If I'm doing that, I don't need to promote anything. I am just attracting. That's the energy that I want to have in my life. When I'm promoting, it is always others-focused. When I'm promoting, it's always out there. I don't need to be living my life out there. I am living my life exactly where my feet are. And if I'm doing that, I'm practicing attraction. Personal anonymity is a lesson in humility. Actually, I'll save that for Tradition 12. Concept 11, I just kind of talked about that just now. It was it talks about administrative committees, administrative and executive committees, and that it basically means that people can contribute different things. There are different committees because they can contribute different things. And that's when my mom and I broke that down. It was, we can have separate committees. We can have two people on a committee for one thing, and we can have one person on a committee for another just because our family's small. We can have more on other things, and people can have different sets of jobs because we have different gifts and talents that we bring. Tradition 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles above personalities. Anonymity means humility to me. Anonymity is not about, I don't share my last name. It's part of it is, respecting the anonymity of all the other people in the program. But anonymity at a deep spiritual level is that the things don't separate me from you all. There is no last name, prestige, job description, car I drive, where I go home to. Those are not important in here. What's important here is that I'm Alex, and I know you all in that way. I tell you what's in my heart. Anonymity is understanding that I'm one of many, that I belong to something. And it's the spiritual foundation of all of these traditions. All of them. I need anonymity and this level of humility in order to do any of the rest of this. Principles above personalities means that I'm focusing on, who is that other person without all of those things? Who is that person without their last name and their job and the car that they drive? What is that person without the judgments I've made about them in the first 30 seconds of knowing them? Do I value that over the perceptions that I want to cling to? Concept 12 is, I think it was a cop-out so that they could add another five concepts. Because the spiritual foundation for world services is contained in the general warranties of the conference, Article 12 of the Charter. And the five general warranties are: one, that only sufficient operating funds, including an ample reserve, be its prudent financial principle; two, that no conference member shall be placed in unqualified authority over other members; three, that all decisions be reached by discussion, vote, and whenever possible by unanimity; four, that no conference action ever be personally punitive or an incitement to public controversy; and five, that though the conference serves Al-Anon, it shall never perform any act of government, and that like the fellowship of Al-Anon family groups which it serves, it shall always remain democratic in thought and action. All right, there's a quiz that's coming, and you need to remember all of those. No. Warranty one, sufficient operating funds and an ample reserve. This teaches me a good financial principle. What is an ample reserve? It teaches me I don't need to... I have a tendency to hoard because I'm scared. I'm scared. I operate out of scarcity a lot of times, and this teaches me not to operate out of scarcity. I keep my ample reserve. I understand what that means to me, and I understand what my sufficient operating funds are, and everything else, it's okay. It's okay. It'll be okay. Warranty two, no conference member shall be placed in unqualified authority. This is sort of tradition two, no unqualified authority. A lot of times I'll try to assume unqualified authority, and that's not the move. Three, that all decisions be reached by discussion, vote, and whenever possible by unanimity. My decision making and my relationships is based on discussion and vote. And whenever possible, unanimity. We try to understand. It's not about one person making decisions. It's about us coming to an understanding. That no conference action may ever be personally punitive. Or an incitement to public controversy. I made a lot of punitive actions. This challenges me with the idea of what if punishment is not necessary? What if punishment doesn't help anything? I thought that people had to be punished for actions that were not good. Punishment doesn't solve anything. There's no punishment in Al-Anon. There's no punishment in these rooms, and it's really wonderful. I'm glad I never get punished. So, punishment is just telling somebody, like, you're bad for doing this. Right? It's not teaching anybody. That's rehabilitation when we're learning from our mistakes. I can seek that out. But a lot of my actions would be punitive. Just, you need to suffer because I don't like what you did. And that's not acting out, walking out these principles. And that though the conference serves Al-Anon, it'll never perform an act of government and remain democratic. This also harkens back to tradition two. There's no authority. I'm not the authority. That I should remain democratic in thought and action. It's about participation. It's about participating with other people, not about one person making a decision for the rest of us, or for me making a decision about the rest of you. You know, that's not how it works. We're participating in this anyway. The personalized version we have at the end I really love because it says, presuming goodwill and trusting in my higher power's guidance, I practice prudence and balance in all my affairs. That's what I move towards. That's what I'm searching for, is presuming goodwill, just generally presuming goodwill for others, and practicing prudence and balance in all my affairs. That's the goal. If I can do that, we're set. You know, if I can do that, I'll be okay. I intended to end like 7 minutes ago so we would have an opportunity for people to share. We have like 3 minutes, you know, if anybody wants to share about their experience with any of these, if it opened any eyes, or if you have experience with the legacies, I would love to hear about that. Anyway, thank you.